recognize it?
Yeah.
It's the Drupal song.
Yeah.
I actually, I looked briefly for, I know that you're Canadian, or,
yep.
And I looked briefly for like famous Canadian music, and I really didn't want to play like Celine Dion or Shania Twain.
Justin Bieber, yeah, he's Canadian.
Oh boy, man. You guys are just pumping out all the hits up there, aren't you?
Michael Bublé, geez. Lots of options.
So anyway, welcome to the Drupal Easy Podcast. I am Mike Anello. I am flying solo today with our guest, Lee Hunter, the new Drupal documentation lead. So welcome, Lee.
Hi. Great to be here.
You are not our first Canadian, but I'm trying to play different music at the opening of every podcast at this point. And you know, as I was saying, I couldn't find something really representative of Canada that I was happy with. Although I was for a minute there, I had the Canadian national anthem, which is beautiful. But instead, I pulled one out of the archives. That was the Drupal Brass from 2011 playing the Drupal song. And for those of you who haven't heard it, I'll actually put the link in the show notes to YouTube. But that's Tom Geller, who's been a frequent guest of ours on trombone, Dave Reed, who we've had on the podcast on horn, Jeffrey McGuire on something called the Alp horn, which I'm not really familiar with. I think it's a giant horn, though. That's what I'm guessing. Kevin, and I'm sorry, Kevin, I'm about to, you know, just completely destroy your last name. Cieslewski? Lee, you're looking at the notes as well. Can you? Any idea how to pronounce his name?
My Polish is a little rusty. Jeez.
We'll go with Cieslewski. He's on trombone. And I believe that was arranged and conducted by Robert Douglas. So thanks to those guys. All right. So, Lee, you are the brand new, shiny, new car smell Drupal documentation lead.
Yep, that's right.
So before we get into that, why don't we introduce yourself to the community and tell us a little bit about yourself and how you found yourself in this position?
Well, I guess I'm by trade, I'm an editor, specifically a technical editor for the last 15 or 20 years. And I kind of stumbled into content management systems when I worked at a company called Corel, which you may remember. At the time, this was around 2000, 2001, they were looking for document management system and a content management system. And they asked me, I was working in the documentation team, but they asked me to do some research into what was available, how much it would cost, and all that sort of stuff. And I got really interested in what was available, starting to become available with open source tools, especially in the web content space, and got really excited about the possibilities. And since then, I kind of followed what was happening there, but I've never actually worked with a content management system or not to any great extent. I haven't worked in a Drupal shop or anything like that. So I'm a bit of an oddity, I think, in the Drupal community, in that most people seem to be working with Drupal on a day-to-day basis. They're developers, they're, you know, usability people or whatever. And I just sort of came out of nowhere.
So have you been working on Drupal documentation in the past, or kind of what was your path?
Yeah. I came across a Drupal about 5 or 6 years ago and got really excited by the community in particular. And I also got really, really excited by the documentation that was on the website, just because it was so, not so bad, but so it had obviously grown really, really fast without anybody having a chance to get it organized. And, and since that's something I specialized was in, you know, content architecture, technical architecture, I sort of took that on and rearranged everything and pushed things around and got things sort of into the proper buckets, which was a lot of fun. I really, really enjoyed it, even though it was quite a challenge, but it was a lot of fun. And since then, I've been involved pretty much fairly steadily over the years with the documentation.
I can hear a lot of the Drupal developers who are listening to this podcast thinking to themselves, oh my goodness, thank God someone like Lee is actually interested and thinks it's fun to reorganize documentation. So So how long have you been involved with the documentation on Drupal.org?
About 6 years.
About 6 years.
Yeah.
All right. So how did you find yourself, you know, so you've been you've been involved, and I assume that that's kind of been ramping up in your level of commitment over the past few years. So how did it come about that you are now our documentation lead?
Well, I'd participated in some of the sprints and some of the planning sessions that had gone on over the years. And I'd been pushing certain ideas about what I think should happen, and we should do things this way or that way, and this is what's really going to work. And never really totally stepping up and taking responsibility for it. But the doc lead position has been open for since about last July of last year.
Right.
And I just started to think, well, now it's put up or shut up. You know, you've been talking about all this stuff for so long. You know, maybe it's time stood up and pushed a little more on the things you've been talking about.
So it wasn't exactly one of those things where, you know, the community said, all those interested in being the doc lead, step forward, and you stood still and everybody took a step back. It's something you actually wanted. So
it mixed feelings about it, because I wouldn't call myself a natural leader, but the things that I see that need to happen, you know, the ideas that I think need to be manifested, make it compelling, make it really interesting for me.
Yeah, and I think it's for us, it's interesting as a community, because your background is not in development, not in building Drupal sites, but actually as a technical editor.
Yeah.
So what's your plan? I mean, what's you've alluded to that you have these ideas moving forward about how things should be. So share with us some of those, you know, kind of the broad strokes, some of the ideas of things you would like to see changed or improved.
Well, the overwhelming fact of the Drupal documentation right now is that it is really, really massive. Like, and as I wrote in my blog post, when I was appointed as the doc team lead, it's a really big documentation set. It's not the biggest in the world. You know, if you worked at Boeing Aircraft, you know, there'd be like tons more. But for an open source project for pretty much any software, there's a lot of content there. And there are very few people working on it, at least who are dedicated to working on the documentation per se. There's lots of people who contribute bits and pieces here and there, but very few people are just focused on the documentation itself, you know, a very small handful. So you've got a small group of people with a massive amount of content, and the tools that we're working are really, really inadequate. You know, it's just... I mean, it's kind of amazing that we've reached this point.
So when you say tools, are you talking about the, like, when you go to and click edit on a page and actually typing it in, or are you talking more on the organizational side of things?
Well, both in terms of the authoring experience and in terms of the ability to manage and structure the content.
Okay.
And basically what we have available now, with a few minor enhancements, is just a kind of out-of-the-box Drupal experience with the book module and a view that we can use for management, but really not enough to do the kind of a documentation project that we have here. And we need to do a fair bit more. Nothing really, really super fancy or challenging. Some of the things we need are very straightforward and simple, but because up until now, historically, the documentation has been a part of the overall Drupal.org website, it's been very difficult to implement things because we can't do anything with documentation that doesn't affect the entire site. Right. So one of the first steps is going to be to separate the documentation into its own site, where we can start implementing things that are specifically for the documentation. I think that's really important.
Wow. So is that something that's underway, or is that in the planning phase, or where's that in the...
It's been talked about for a long, long time. Right. And we've actually got a bit of a demo site up and running. I've been working with Jennifer Hogden, who's the previous doc lead, mm-hmm. and is still in charge of the API docs. And so there's the start of something there. It needs a lot of work, especially in terms of the authoring experience, but we're moving in that direction. I'm really excited about that.
So that would be something like documentation.drupal.org?
Yeah, or helps.drupal.org or okay. docs.drupal.org, something like that.
So is the idea, and I'm just going to throw this out here and, you know, feel free to shoot me down, but is the idea to build that in Drupal 7 or possibly,
Yeah, we might
Because you're talking about improving the authoring experience, and one of the big wins that we're hoping to get with Drupal 8 is the same thing.
Yeah.
That's what triggered it in my mind.
Yeah. So yeah, possibly Drupal 8. That's crazy talk, but all I've been looking forward to is Drupal 7. But
welcome
if we could
to
do it in Drupal 8,
podcast.
Yeah.
Home of crazy talk.
Yeah.
But
that definitely that WYSIWYG or that completely interactive authoring is one thing that we really need. But there's a bunch of other important things as well, like just the ability for someone to flag a page or subscribe to a page like you do with an issue, so that you can follow that page of content. You know, we can't do that now. That's it drives me crazy, and it's such a simple thing. So many, maybe 50% of the Drupal websites out there do that for all sorts of things, but we can't do that yet. And that'll allow us to, recruit people, say a security person to own a page in the security section, so that they'll, it'll be easy for them to keep track of that the content that's there is correct and up to date.
So how about on the organizational side of it? What kind of tools are you talking about to further organize the documentation? It's got to be something more than the book module, right? I'm going to guess that it's, it's something that allows, and this is one of my little pet peeves, a particular documentation page to appear in more than one section.
Yes, exactly. That's something in technical communication, they call it single sourcing, that you do the content once and it can be output or displayed in different places. Yeah, absolutely. That's one important thing. And again, it's not terribly difficult to do that. It's not a huge technical challenge, but yeah, it's something that's really, really important. The other thing is, actually, this is more, again, on the authoring side, but something called conditional text, which is very common with techcom tools like FrameMaker, where you can tag a chunk of text as, say, Drupal 6, and the next paragraph as Drupal 7, and then allow the user to decide whether he wants to see the Drupal 6 content or the Drupal 7 content.
Wow.
And filter it out.
That sounds fantastic. Because I can't tell you how many times it's happened to me and even my students that they've gone to a documentation page and not paid attention to the little bit up top saying this is for 6.x or 7.x and tried to follow the documentation for the wrong version and got incredibly frustrated.
Yes. It's a huge, huge problem. And there's without, that ability to apply conditions to the content, it gets really confusing. Either you do separate pages, which people don't realize which page they're on, or you end up with really long pages that jump from one version to another, and neither option is really great.
How about, let me ask you about another thing, which I think we've talked about on the podcast before, and there's such a great deal of documentation or blog posts outside of Drupal.org. And I've always thought it would be really cool to be able to, link to that type of content from a documentation page, but not necessarily in the main body of the content, but just, kind of as an aside saying, hey, if you're interested in this, check out these blog posts from the Drupal Easy or from the Drupal community.
Yep. Yeah, I think it's a good idea. We do it to some extent. It has problems, one of which is keeping track of it and making sure that
it's not people stale
or that it's not spam. That's, you know, people are just throwing junk articles on their website to, you know, for hits or whatever. Yeah. So there's, I think it's really valuable, and I want to use that community content, but I'm a little cautious about how to actually execute on that.
Right. It would be very difficult to do it in a non-curated manner, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So we're talking about, you know, adding some really, really cool tools to Drupal's documentation. And I know one of the things that you and I exchanged a couple emails before the podcast, and one of the things that you alluded to was, if we build this, this will not only be a really good tool for our community, but potentially for other communities
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, and this gets back to where I came in with this whole web CMS thing. I was looking for a TechCom web CMS, and I couldn't find anything. And I still don't think there's an open source tool, really good open source tool. Even though Drupal itself is used in a lot of cases, it's not that easy to get all this stuff together, you know, unless you really know what you're doing, and make it into you know, a really good solution for that area. So my thought is, and this also relates to the problem we have with the shortage of people, if we get a really good TechCom distribution, or a good knowledge base of how to use it in this area, then we'll get more use out there in the TechCom field. We'll get more TechCom specialists. And by specialists, I mean both writers and people who work with TechCom tools involved in the community. And I think that would have huge benefits for the Drupal documentation if that happened.
I now feel like you're sitting in your lair and you're seeing all this as just a giant row of dominoes, where if you can push over that first domino, the last domino to fall could, you know, possibly be a lot more Drupal documentation contributors.
Yeah, this is my theory. I don't know whether it's true or not, but this is what I've been telling people for years. So I'm gonna try and make it happen.
You know, every organization needs its evil genius. So you know, hopefully you are our evil genius when it comes to this.
I don't know about the genius part. Maybe
we'll find out. You know, we'll have you back on in a year, and we'll see. See where we are. So do you have a time frame in mind? I know that obviously some of this stuff is going to involve, obviously a lot of volunteer support. Is the Drupal Association involved in this at all as far as providing any development support, or what's the big picture here?
It's going to take some time. I don't think we're on the association's radar at all, which is a bit of a shame, since, you know, the documentation is actually a huge chunk of what's up there on the website. But it will take some time. It's going to be, you know, I would guess after Drupal 8 before this really starts to be implemented in any serious way. So maybe, you know, sometime next year, I think a lot of this will happen.
So it's a softball question because I know the answer, but what can we as the community do to help? What are you looking for? I mean, at this time, like if someone is listening to this podcast and saying, wow, it seems like a really cool project, I wonder if they need people with my skills. So what kind of skills do you need in the near term, in the short term, and in the long term? Because I know that we've had, and I should have looked it up before we started the podcast, but we've had, I don't believe we've had Jennifer on, but I think we had the documentation lead on who was previous to Jennifer. But a lot of times it ends up being, we just need people to write more documentation or to learn how to write good documentation. Yeah. But it sounds like, from the things that we're talking about, you actually need some site builders as well.
Yeah, I mean, we certainly do need people to write documentation and for all sorts of things. But for this particular thing, we do need some technical expertise in a couple of areas. One is in the user experience, because some of these things I talked about, like the conditional text, can be pretty challenging in terms of the user experience. For the authoring experience, it can be quite complicated. You know, you've got to keep track of the different versions, and you got to be able to show and hide them, you know, interactively. And then doing things like restructuring a massive amount, 14,000 pages of content, you're going to need to drag and drop stuff around, you know, and move big chunks here and there, and you know, develop these maps of content. So that's going to be quite challenging in terms of how of the front end it works for that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. We've got some work done. Jennifer actually has been doing a fair bit of work over the last couple of years on figuring out how to do the mapping, which would replace the book module, right, and also the conditional text. And then there's the, I guess, just the site building of putting all this together and maintaining it and getting all the features in place and making sure it still works well with the rest of Drupal.org. Like, how do we connect the documentation to the projects is a challenge. Like, right now it's a manual process, but we'd like to have some kind of automated process so that it's clear. So it's always easy for a document, for the project maintainer to connect with his documentation and vice versa.
Something as easy as a checkbox if possible.
Yeah.
So let's say someone's listening to this podcast. And first of all, I want to congratulate you on making documentation really, really exciting. Because I always worry about documentation podcasts, because I think we've done, this might be our third one over the course of 104 episodes. And I always worry that it's kind of a dry topic, and it's always kind of the same thing that, you know, we need people to write better documentation. Please come help us. But it seems like what you're trying to do here is you know, make it so that it's not such a chore to write documentation. Like, if we have really, really awesome tools, you know, as you said, that should hopefully encourage people to write better documentation.
It will encourage people to spend more time writing documentation, and hopefully the people, what really excites me is if those technical communicators out there who are not using Drupal start using it for their web-based projects, then they're going to want to get involved in the community as well. And they're people who are born with that gene of doing documentation, like I have.
Right.
So if we can get more people like that involved, you know, I'm always encouraging people within the Drupal community to work on documentation, but, you know, their gene is for doing development or theming or usability or whatever, right, and it's great that they contribute. We need more people with that other gene of working with words to be involved with the documentation.
And I also think, and this has kind of been a pet peeve of mine, I also think that documentation contributions should be as prominent on one's profile page as commits.
Yeah.
Because now when you go to a profile page, you see, you know, the documentation link is, you know, they've, you know, this person has edited over, you know, 10 documents or whatever the text string there is. But when it comes to commits, you see, you know, what project they work on and how many commits. And it's actually, for developers, you know, the more commits and the more different projects we worked on, it's you know, it's kind of a street cred thing. To be able to do something like that for documentation, I think would be, you know, kind of have to level the playing field. And
actually this is kind of ties into another thing. This is one of my really crazy ideas, but you're talking about the ability to follow what people are doing in documentation. And what I would like to see eventually is a technical communication internship, so that we have a bunch of people who are taking technical communication in university or college who get involved in a program. We have 3 or 4 or 5 of these young, energetic people, and we're able to follow them and work with them and keep track of what they're doing and give them guidance and also provide, you know, at the end of 3 months or 4 months, some kind of certificate or you know, some acknowledgement of what they've contributed to the community so that they can take that and go to their employer and say, you know, here's what I did. Here it's all documented. You can go and look at it yourself and see what I did and how I did it and how I worked with my peers, et cetera, et cetera. So again, that's sort of giving back to the technical communication community, something that, that will, you know, pay dividends to ourselves as well.
Yeah, that's a great idea. That's, you know, all right. So now that we have everybody all in a frenzy about wanting to work on documentation, where do they go? Like if someone is hearing you talk about all this stuff today and like, wow, that's something I want to get involved with, where do we direct them at this point?
Well, there's a couple of things. People can contact me directly, and I've had people approach me about different things over the last month or two, which has been great. We're doing a couple of sprints after DrupalCon, one of which is just for writing documentation, but there's going to be one on the Saturday following DrupalCon where we're actually going to focus on TechCom tools and not specifically Drupal.org, but Drupal.org plus the wider tool set for TechCom. And then there's the issue queue for documentation, which has a tags for there's one called Docs Infrastructure. So people should take a look at those issues that are already there and make comments on them or propose their own issues or whatever. And that's also a good place to get started.
Is there a IRC channel for Drupal documentation?
Yeah, there is, and it's I'm afraid I'm not much of an IRC guy.
Oh,
I don't
okay.
think it's very active. So yeah, I should be on that more, but I'm usually on there during sprints, but not day to day.
All right, well let's go ahead, and if you would, Lee, if you can put the link to the proper place in the issue queue for documentation in the show notes, I'll make sure that gets posted. And so the sprints in Portland, those are on the Friday, the sprint day, correct?
Yeah, the straight doc sprint is on Friday, and then the Saturday we'll do the TechCom tools sprint.
Okay, fantastic. So, oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say there's one other link I'll give you is a really comprehensive post that Jennifer did a while back about what the plans are for docs on Drupal.org and how we're going to approach it. And that gives a fantastic rundown of the issues and the options and how we're going to tackle them.
Excellent. So let's fast forward into the future here just for a minute, because you mentioned in one of our email exchanges that the Tor module for Drupal 8 is something very interesting that we should be looking at. And as a matter of fact, the creators of the Tor module are scheduled for a future Drupal Easy podcast, I think in about a month or so. So as a preview to that podcast and to tie it into what we just talked about, can you give us a quick overview of what the Tor module is and how that might tie into everything we're talking about?
Yeah, the Tor module, as I understand it, I'm not totally familiar with it, but it gives you a way of presenting small JavaScript pop-ups throughout your site and managing the content in those pop-ups so that you can take people from one step to another throughout your site. What's exciting to me is that there's a company called Provonix in Belgium, and they've been working on some peripheral parts to the Tor module, which will make it incredibly useful for doing tutorials, which, of course, is a major part of documentation. And what they're doing is using the Selenium add-on for Firefox, and that's capturing all the steps, all the input, and then they're pasting that into the Tor module and some other stuff on the back end. And coming up with these amazing, guided tours of that take you through, not just through a Drupal site, but through from a Drupal site to an external site and back again, and giving you the user the ability to add comments and to give feedback. So it's got all sorts of uses, like, user acceptance testing. You do your walkthrough as a user acceptance test. The user can go through and put in their comments as they're going through, which is cool. But for me, as a technical communicator, this looks amazing for doing tutorials. And the more I think about it, the more I look at it, the more I think, wow, why do these long tutorials that are just strictly text-based with screenshots and forcing the user to go from the written text to, their live site and back again, back and forth, when you can make that tutorial, right inside a live site and use it right inside the views module and take the user from one thing to another, and then over to the rules module and then back to the views configuration. So
yeah, those two modules need this more than anything.
Yeah. And I've done that. I've gone through these tutorials and oh my God, I have to go here and I have to go there. And where am I now? And I've lost my place. Well, this will take you through all those steps, which is really powerful and really cool. And I'm very excited about that.
Yeah. When I first saw the post about the Tor module being committed, I kind of did like a little, head shake and said to myself, what the heck's the Tor module? And there's a bunch of articles and information about it out there, and I'll put a couple links in the podcast notes. We'll have Christoph and Nick and I believe it's Lee. I believe that's the third guy's name. I have it right here. Let me check. Christoph, Nick, and Lee on a future podcast, and we'll learn all about the Tor module. So, alrighty, well. Lee, you're going to be hanging around, and we will get back to you very shortly with the five questions.
Okay.
Our new feature. But in the meantime, let's move on to some other news from around the Drupal universe. Let's start off with it's a post from the Drupal Association with the title, What's Up with the Webinars? So I don't know if you noticed this last week, but early last week there was an email from the Drupal Association advertising the first Drupal Association webinar. And the kind of the weird thing about it was that the webinar was actually hosted using Acquia's webinar infrastructure. And it seemed to rile some people up a little bit, thinking that why is the Drupal Association promoting an Acquia webinar? And the post that I'm referring to, What's Up with the Webinars, blog post by, I believe that was Megan. Let me just double check. Yep, Megan Sinicki. Basically went to, explained, hold on everybody, this is nothing evil, but the Drupal Association is going to start doing these public, community-focused teaching webinars, and the way they're going to do it is they're going to leverage Drupal Association sponsors infrastructure. It just happens that the first one is with Acquia. Acquia has a pretty robust webinar infrastructure, and they're willing to let the Drupal Association use it. So that's kind of what's happening. And it sounds like in the future, there's going to be other supporting partners that are going to be lending their infrastructure for different webinars. It was just kind of funny the way the invite went out. Everybody went, whoa, what's all this? And then this blog post came out, and for the most part, it settled everybody down. And I think overall, it's probably a good thing because it's a community-focused opportunity for learning. So I wanted to mention that. And that the first one actually took place last week when we were off. So just be on the lookout for the next one. The next story I wanted to talk about was an article called Drupal's Golden Handcuffs. And this was actually posted last year, but apparently the author was not published on Drupal Planet until recently, so he decided to republish it. And I just realized I don't have his name, which is crazy town. I will try and find that in the meantime, and I apologize. Oh, here, I can pull it up right here. Just give me 1 second. Amateur hour here on the Drew Pleasy podcast. Mike Crittenden. Hopefully I pronounced his last name right. Mike Crittenden. Anyway, the article is called Drupal's Golden Handcuffs, and it actually made me laugh out loud a few times. And the gist of the article is that, and I'm going to quote here, Drupal's main draw is that it gives you the power to do an insane amount of work with zero coding. This is both its blessing and its curse. And the way Mike approaches this is basically saying it's a blessing because you can get really, really powerful things done really, really quickly. But when things don't go right or when the functionality is not built in out of the box, that's kind of the curse, is that it's really, really difficult, or sometimes it's even really, really fragile to make changes to. The part of the article that made me laugh out loud is he opened up his section talking about the curse of Drupal with, here's a typical day for a Drupal developer. I'm bored. Ah, what the heck? I'm bored. Oh, it's time for lunch. I'm bored. And you can imagine that the developer, during this time that he's bored, is all he's doing is clicking around the interface, creating a content type, creating views, not really doing anything super stimulating. I'm bored. And then a moment of, you suck, Drupal, because something didn't go right, followed right back on the I'm bored train, which I found myself laughing out loud because it pretty much describes, you know, I would say 1 or 2 days a week of my life. So he kind of follows it up by saying, so your work isn't quite as interesting or challenging as it might be if you're working with Django or Rails or whatever, but you're able to do stuff a lot faster than you'd be able to do using anything else. So you can't leave without dealing with the frustration of knowing that. Try spending 150 hours building proximity search with mapping in Django and knowing that it would take a day in Drupal. It's the Drupal trade-off, and unfortunately, it's not something that any version of Drupal can really improve upon. And Lee, I know you're not a developer per se, but is this something that you can relate to at all?
No, because I'm. It's always challenging for me. I mean, maybe just making sites, yeah, but I don't know. I always find it interesting. My problem is I get too distracted because there's so much available, so many options. You know, I can just go down so many garden paths.
Yeah, I think this is that's a good point, where I think this article is geared more towards site builders / developers.
Yeah.
People who both do the clicky stuff and also do the code stuff. Anyway, if you are one of those people, check out this article. I think you'll find it as entertaining as I did. So last story, I'm actually going to toot our own horn a little bit. And by our, I'm talking about the Florida Drupal community. I'm based in Florida, as is Andrew and Ryan, the other two usual co-hosts. Over the weekend, we had our annual big event, Florida Drupal Camp. And it went off wonderfully. We were lucky enough to have Ryan Zrama from Drupal Commerce give our keynote. And that was on Saturday. And the day after the sessions on Sunday, it's our tradition to give back to our local community with an event we call Coding for a Cause, where we invite virtually anybody who wants to show up to come and help build sites for local nonprofit organizations. So we had about 40 people yesterday show up. Actually, I'm sorry, 2 days ago show up. And we actually started working on 4 different sites for 4 different organizations. And I just wanted to give a shout out to each of these organizations because they're really, really cool organizations. The first one is called Helportunity, and we are building a new website for them. Actually, not even a new website. They don't have a website, so we are building their first website. They are focused on supporting recreation, education, and volunteer activities for elderly, disabled, and homeless persons. So I'm not sure if there's a better organization that is in need of a website in order to get the word out about that we're doing, about what they're doing, as well as looking for sponsors. So in the very near future, they will have a brand new site. Project 2 was a site for the East Coast Greenway, specifically the Florida chapter of the East Coast Greenway. They are focused on advocacy, support, and development of a 3,000-mile multi-use greenway route between Maine and Key West. So they are looking to improve their web presence and further engage people in volunteer activity and building community support for the Florida portion of the trail. The third one is the Orlando Music Club, which is a foundation that provides scholarships to students interested in studying music. They also provide music resources for teachers, as well as a matching service putting volunteer instructors together with students and music resources. Just a really, really nice organization. And the last one is Urban Rethink, which is a Orlando-based creative hub that focuses on community events and co-working. And we're actually helping them build a addition to their already Drupal website to help foster more community and user-generated content in hopes of spreading the word about what they do in Orlando. So those are the four projects, and they all got off to a great start on Sunday and should all be launching in the very near future. So, alrighty, real quick, let's talk about our sponsor, webenable.com. They were actually at Florida Drupal Camp. Salim Lakhani gave a presentation, actually, titled A Sneak Peek at Dev Panel. And Dev Panel is kind of their – it's actually a much bigger project than I first imagined, but it's a way to manage development environments not only on their servers – and this is where the secret sauce really is – not only on their servers but on virtually anybody's servers. So if you install Dev Panel on your local machine or on, you know, virtually any web host, then you can control all of those servers from the web-enabled Dev Panel. Really, really interesting stuff. And as I said, you can set up Dev Panel, or you will be able to set up Dev Panel on any server at any hosting company running virtually all of the major distributions. So that's coming soon from WebEnabled. So check them out at webenabled.com. Oh, it's tough being being the only host here, Lee. I'm used to Ryan or Andrew jumping in so I can get a glass of water, but so I'm going to keep rolling here.
Okay.
We're almost through it. Picks of the week. And Lee, actually, I'm going to let you go first on this. And this is the section of the podcast where we each get to pick something that we'd like to highlight in the Drupal community. So why don't you tell us about your pick of the week?
Actually, I kind of already talked about it, which was the walkthrough project. So I don't know if whether I have anything else I can.
I was afraid you were going to say that.
Yeah, damn. You know, I'm so excited about it. It's really the thing that has got me most excited in the last month or so. And one thing I can say about it is that they did a crowdsourcing or crowdfunding effort. I think it was on Indiegogo, and they got way over their target. A couple of companies jumped in at the last minute, so it's looking like it's really going to take off. And there are a number of initial projects which will distributions, I think, which will take advantage of it quite quickly. So really looking forward to seeing more from that.
Yeah, we didn't mention the actual URL, but if you go to walkthrough.it, walkthrough.it, there's some really good resources there for learning about what this tour module and the walkthrough stuff is all about. That's where I actually went first, and there's a really nice little video by Christoph, and let me grab his name real quick, Christoph Van Tome, I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name. I'll find out in a few weeks when he's on the podcast, though. But that's a really good resource for, you know, learning about the tour module and all these walkthroughs. So thank you for that, Lee. My pick of the week is the pop-up module and this is the podcast of crazy names. And this is probably why Andrew bailed on the podcast today, because he's notorious for not being able to pronounce names. But this is by Skeepers de Bruyn. Goes by username Skeepers, S-C-H-E-E-P-E-R-S, on Drupal.org. All right, so the pop-up module is a Drupal 7 module that allows you to create little CSS-based pop-up windows on your site. So there's an old module for Drupal 6 called, I believe it's called the Pop-ups API, and I'm in the process of migrating a site from Drupal 6 to Drupal 7. And I decided to move to this pop-ups module, and it's actually really, really slick. Actually, pop-up, singular, pop-up module. It's actually quite slick. The one part about it I like the best is it actually has a filter rule, a text format rule. And kind of like anyone who's used the GMAT module a long time ago, you can actually write your own little tag with square brackets to define a GMAP. Well, you can do the same thing now with a pop-up. So you can create this pop-up tag and have it load, you know, any node or any variety of other things from your site into a pop-up. One thing that really impresses me about it is its speed. It's really, really fast. That pop-up just shows up really, really quickly. It's themed really nicely. I'm actually doing it for a site with a responsive design, and so far it's been playing nice with responsive design. So definitely check out the pop-up module. The link will be in the show notes. All right, moving on to upcoming gigs. I will be at DrupalCon Portland doing the mentor training with Chris Shattuck and the rest of the buildamodule.com mentors. That takes place on Monday, May 20th, the first day of DrupalCon. If you're interested in signing up for that, the link will be in the podcast notes, and it's also obviously on DrupalCon.org.
So, Lee, can I ask what level of background people would need to participate in? Is that for newcomers, or do you have to have some development experience?
It's actually for everybody, and it's kind of a different type of training, because the way it works is buildamodule.com has, I don't even know how many videos. I mean, they do online screencasts to teach people Drupal, and they have tons of them. I would venture to say well over 100, if not, you know, double that. Right. But this is not a typical classroom training where someone stands up at the front and lectures and then you do exercises. This training is, we give you complete access to the buildamodule.com video library, and you pick what you want to work on. And there's myself and Chris Shattuck and a lot of other mentors. I think the ratio is somewhere around 3 to 1. Or three or four students to one. And we walk around and we help people work through these lessons. And if they want to figure out how to apply a lesson to their site, you know, that's what we're there for. So it's almost like augmented one-on-one training, where we ask you to get started with watching a video, you know, follow along with the video. But if you get stuck or have questions or, you know, need to know, you know, I understand what the video is doing, but how about if I just want to make this one little tweak? How do I do that? That's what the mentors are there for.
Ah.
So yeah, if you have an itch that needs to be scratched, this is a great opportunity to do that, because
I may do that myself.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
So it's available. If you go to DrupalCon.org, you can register for that. Are you presenting at DrupalCon? Are you doing anything at DrupalCon other than the sprints, Lee?
I'm not doing anything specific, but I'm hoping to organize some BOFs on different subjects. And I'm also really hoping to connect with people who do technical communication. And so if you're going to DrupalCon, you want to talk about that kind of stuff, please ping me, and I'd love to sit down with you. I'm more interested in connecting with people that way than I am in attending particular sessions. So, you know, I'm always available for that that kind of a talk. So,
yeah, what you might want to do, Lee, is you might want to schedule like a short BOF each of the 3 days.
Yeah.
You know, for, you know, documentation, technical communication.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Good idea.
So, excellent. So, I look forward to meeting you in Portland. So where can people get a hold of you? Are you on Twitter, or how can people get a hold of you?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter, Lee Hunter, one word, or the Drupal Docs Twitter feed. I'm also running as well. Okay. Or on my website, streamoflight.com.
There's a contact form that people can utilize to get a hold of you there?
Yep.
Okay, well,
and of course, Drupal.org. And, you know,
of course. Yeah, and your username is, I believe, is it Lee Hunter?
Yep.
Lee Hunter. Wow. Make it very easy for everybody.
Yep.
Other than that, you can follow Drupal Easy on Twitter at Drupal Easy. Andrew and Ryan are at Andrew M. Riley and Liberator without the last vowel. I am Ultimike pretty much everywhere. Our sponsor is Web Enabled on Twitter. So let's wrap up this podcast, Lee. I'm going to ask you 5 questions and just give me some quick answers, and we'll go from there. So, Lee, what is your current, and we have the word development environment in here, but I'm going to call it your current documentation environment.
Well, some days you can find me cursing Ubuntu, and some days you can find me cursing Windows.
Okay. And then name one person in the Drupal community that you think we should be keeping an eye on.
Oh, that's a really hard question. I know the one person that I'm keeping an eye on at the moment is Christoph, because he's the person that I know of who's most involved with the techcom world, and which is what I'm most interested in. So, I'd have to say Christoph.
His ears are probably burning after this podcast. Where would you like to see a future DrupalCon?
Well, Montreal, of course.
Is that where you're from?
No, but I'm 2 hours up the road, so. You know, but it would be the perfect place. People would have so much fun. It would be just amazing.
You know, I was actually talking to someone about that exact subject over the weekend, about how awesome it would be to have a Canadian DrupalCon.
Plus, it would be great for people who have problems getting into the States or whatever. You know, right. they'd rather go to Canada for a variety of reasons. You know, right. Multilingual city, which is amazing. Be the perfect place.
I'm with you on that 100%. Who is your favorite Drupal event speaker? So when you go to a Drupal event or watch a session recording online, is there a speaker that you know you kind of gravitate towards and never want to miss?
I'll always go see Webchick, you know, because she's always fun and amazing, and she always has the inside story and everything. Right. That's the person I was going to mention, but then I realized there was that guy at the Montreal Drupal camp last year who's, I can't remember his name, but he's the Israeli guy who does the organic groups. Slipped my mind.
Yep. Now you're making me forget who it is. he's very funny though.
He was amazing. He was really funny and just total joy to watch. I'd go see him again.
Amitai Bernstein.
Yeah.
Amitai.
Yeah. That's
there
it.
We go. Okay. Very good. I looked that up super fast. I don't want anybody to think it came to my head. And then finally, if you could add one new feature to Drupal with the snap of your fingers, what would it be? With the caveat that it can't be something that you're working on. As we want the documentation tools, you can't pick that.
The one thing that it's documentation related possibly, but nothing I'm working on or talked about. And that's the ability to integrate Drupal with the desktop or with desktop tools, to be able to use FrameMaker or OpenOffice or Microsoft Word and do all sorts of stuff using the power of those tools and have a kind of round trip experience where the content comes to the desktop and goes back to Drupal. And there used to be in Drupal 6 a module or the ability where you could, you know, you could edit your blog from Microsoft Word, but I don't think that's available in Drupal 7 for some reason. It got kind of bogged down in somewhere.
Yeah, it was a blog API module.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't know what happened to that. I've never used stuff like that, so.
Yeah. But for people who work with content authoring, sometimes there are things you can do in a desktop authoring environment that is just going to be really hard to do on the web, and it would be nice to have that integration, but I'm not holding my breath.
Alrighty, well, I think that about wraps it up. You can always follow and subscribe to the Drupal Easy podcast at drupaleasy.com/podcast, and obviously we are in the iTunes store as well as the Miro directory. We're also now on Stitcher, which is available on pretty much all mobile devices. It's kind of like a radio for your smartphone. What else do we have here? As we surf during the week and we find interesting articles, we tag them with Drupal Easy Podcast on Delicious. So if you want kind of a preview of what we're thinking about talking about, you can check out that tag on Delicious. And in the very near future, we will be having, actually the very near future, 2 weeks from this podcast, Bob Kepford from the Weekly Drop, the very popular Drupal email newsletter, will be on. And then the podcast after that will be the guys we've been talking about over and over today, the Tor module team of Christoph von Tom, Nick Scooch, hopefully I pronounced his name right, and Lee Rollins. So, Lee, thank you very much for coming on the podcast and talking about all the great things we have to look forward to.
Thank you. It's been a blast.
All righty. Until next time.